Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Enquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of sarcasm and musical interludes you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Three
all
is out.
Paul
Daner has scooped it up.
Burst up the middle of the field. Look out. Reedy's off to the races.
All right. Welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I, of course, am your Bengals beat writer, Paul Daner Jr., but not with me today is Joe Reedy. Joe Reedy has earned vacation. I think you all heard the anger and angst as the season wore on, which was pretty standard, but we need to give him some time away. So we've given Joe a block of time off to go refresh somewhere in the wilderness. He's earned it, but we must go on. And so I have brought in voice of the Bengals, Dan Hoare. Dan, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Paul, it's my pleasure, but do I need to crank up the grumpiness Joe's place?
Yes.
Do I need to be a curmudgeon?
Yes, curmudgeon a bit, you could. Also, Joe likes to sing a little bit on the podcast. He likes to when the mood strikes him.
Yeah.
Not that you don't have to, but if you do, it's something that tends to happen.
You know, I'm a karaoke guy from way back, so
really?
It's not out of the question. I will crank up the tunes at some point if inspired.
Wow. Now I like that. Now, so what's your go-to karaoke song, or does it change? Maybe it's different now than it was back in the day.
It's evolved. Honestly, I try to go for a crowd pleaser. I want crowd participation. So even a song that's as lame as, say, New York, New York, the crowd always gets into it. Copacabana, there are far worse. I mean, there are very few worse songs than that.
Yeah.
But the crowd will always, you know, get into it. So I'm willing to sing things like that.
That's true. I once actually, I had to give a informative speech for some class, and I did How to Be a Karaoke Superstar. And it's really simple. There's really one thing you need to know.
Yes.
It's not about you.
Yes.
There's too many people that are going, like, they're auditioning for American Idol. You are not. You are there to make everybody else happy and to sing along with you. Get up there and sing Sweet Caroline. If you think you suck, it doesn't matter. Everyone will love it. They won't even hear you. Now, a good modern one, if you do find yourself in one of these situations where it's a song that everybody loves, the kids these days, you could do I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. Everybody knows every word to that song and goes bonkers for it. And they don't even know that you were on the mic in the beginning, but you just made everyone happy.
I'm not doing it, but I appreciate the advice.
just putting it out there.
I've got to draw the line somewhere. Because I don't want to start launching into that song and look out in the first row and see some dude who's like giving it right back to me at the top of his lungs. That's not working.
Then it gets awkward. Yeah, you got to definitely pick your venue if you're going to do that one. Also, while we're on music, it turns out you just told me you're a huge Elvis Costello fan.
I am. That's probably a good indicator of how old I am. But Elvis Costello was my primary guy, I guess you would say, and among popular musicians of my college years. So I had a bunch, but Elvis was at the top of the list.
Why? What was there like a point where it just happened for you? Did you go to a concert and it just cinched it for
No,
you?
It was college years before I ever saw him live. I just really liked the music. So, you know, very versatile guy. He's still getting it done now. You know, he's tried everything. He'll do country. He'll do ballads. He'll do, you know, he was great in kind of punk, alternative rock, whatever you want to call it in his heyday. But I like it all.
Versatile, just like you, Dan.
There you go.
Mr. Versatility. I tell you what, I have to... First of all, say thank you because we have our lead-in under our Volbeat open. We have three calls from you, which thank you to Lindsey Patterson as well and everyone at the Bengals Radio Network for supplying this for us. we just love. There's obviously they gained a lot of traction nationally this year. The Green Bay fumble return call, the balls out call is pretty popular. The Hail Mary call where Lapp, I think, is still recovering somewhere in a Baltimore hospital. And then Reedy's off to the races from the Toledo game a couple years ago. We've been using that one ever since we started, so we have to thank you for those.
Do those?
Were you shocked at sort of the national traction that a few of those got?
Nah. You know what? When all hell breaks loose on an NFL call, you know it's going to get a lot of play because, for one thing, the NFL, more than any other sport, uses the local radio guys' calls. NFL Films has been doing it forever and ever. So that's actually one of the fun things about doing the NFL on the radio. You know that when there's a big moment, it will get widely distributed. And when it's as bonkers as the Terrence Newman fumble recovery was against Green Bay, you kind of anticipate that a lot of people are going to have fun with it.
Yeah, I know. You started the gag of the doctor in the booth now, right?
Yes.
Is that going to continue? And people, I don't know if everybody knows about that, but what is it? It's basically, you just mentioned during the broadcast,
yes.
Thank you to whatever a fake doctor that you've decided to put in the booth to monitor Lapp's condition.
Correct. At the point in any Bengals broadcast where I acknowledge the guys in the booth that help us every Sunday, so it's the spotter, the stat man, the producer, the cut man if it's a home game, the engineer, I will then add, and in the booth today, in case Lapp's passion leads to palpitations, is Dr. Such and Such, and it'll always be a recognizable name, but obviously he's not really there, so it could be Dr. Spock, the famous, you know, child doctor, Dr. Martin Van Nostrand,
yes.
who is a Kramer, recurring Kramer character on
yes.
Seinfeld. So people like that.
Yeah. Dr. Sanjay Gupta going to make an appearance?
He was the first one ever, actually.
He was the first one.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN was our very first fake doctor.
You went right to Gupta off
I went
the top.
To Gupta off the top. Douglas Ross, which I think was George Clooney's character on ER.
Yeah.
You know, he had a Cincinnati tie, so he made an appearance.
Yeah.
I know, you know at one point, NFL Films interviewed me for a feature about Lapp, which is going to be coming up this year in association with the NFL Draft. And so I told them about that bit, and they got a big kick out of it. So I would not be surprised if at some point NFL Films like has a running compilation of the fake doctors that have been in the booth to monitor Lapp.
You should start taking, you got to start taking requests, you know, listener requests and see everybody.
Yeah, listener participation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you got to get them involved. That's what it's all about, interaction on the social media.
You know, that's true. But having said that, our engineer on the Bengals broadcast, Ted Ryan, is a very big fan of the bit. So he will frequently provide suggestions for who the fake doctor could be. So I don't want to deprive Ted of his major contributions.
Sorry. So we won't quite steal his job from him yet. So what did you do, Super Bowl? You know, we can start there if we're going to get into football talk and not just talk about fake doctors all day. The one thing I wrote after the game was the concept of the Seattle blueprint. That I think the Bengals are not far off of. And I kind of made this point before the playoffs even started. There were very few teams that had that elite defense and the ability to just grind people down the way that Seattle and San Francisco in particular, those two teams are very similar, have the young, deep roster, a lot of emerging players. Do you see that? I mean, I guess, do you see the Bengals in the same mold as not as far off maybe as people would imagine to that Seattle blueprint, or is there still quite a bit?
I think that's who they want to be.
Yeah.
I don't think their secondary is that close, but nobody else is either. That
mm-hmm.
would be, when you look at the personnel, that would be probably the biggest difference, just the depth and the quality in the secondary. But if the Bengals can add some pieces there, yeah, I think that's the blueprint.
Yeah. And, you know, if you'd have had a Leon Hall healthy and Terrence Newman, really, the way that he was playing, you could be of that area. The elite safety, you know, the Chancellor-Thomas combo, that's really, yeah, you're right. Very few people have
Nobody.
That. Nobody
They're
has.
The best.
Yeah. It's
probably the best at both spots
yeah.
on the same team, which is saying something.
And the corner, the best, arguably, with
right.
Richard Sherman. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. And those guys are so hard to find, but yet they found them in the backgrounds. It's really kind of in that mode. It is similar where a lot of some of the best players the Bengals have found have been in these backgrounds as well. It's were you surprised what they did to Peyton?
Absolutely.
I mean, that was it was shocking.
I thought the Broncos were going to win. So yeah. It shows you what I know. So I certainly didn't expect it to be a lopsided game in either direction, and certainly didn't expect Denver to get its butt kicked. And if they played again, I don't think it would be like that. But Seattle's the better team.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I guess the one thing, and to get right into the Bengals element of that, and if you look at as far as method of play, having the top defense, and the other element, and you know this is no secret, we're not unearthing new ground here. And Marvin Lewis has said it repeatedly since the day one he showed up here, is turnover differential. And you look at Seattle, San Francisco ran the ball more, threw the ball less than every team in the NFL because they have younger quarterbacks that could possibly get themselves into trouble. They have the lead a lot, so that's also part of it. But they followed that, let's run the ball, let's not turn the ball over and let our defense win us games. The contention amongst the Bengals this year was the only, if you look at that blueprint, the only difference is they let Andy Dalton throw it the 12th most times of any quarterback in the NFL. And some of those were in games where they were trying to come from behind, fell behind a bit, but there was clearly a shading towards throwing the ball more. Hugh Jackson, I think, plans to change that. Do you buy that can make a difference, that could push them more towards that blueprint, that the concept of let's just win games maybe by lower scores and fewer, putting ourselves in the realm of turnovers, of interceptions?
Yeah, it's a big factor. Seattle was number one in the NFL, plus 20 in ratio. I think the Bengals were plus one.
Plus 20.
That's a huge difference. But here's the thing that people have to realize about the running game. It's great if you want to run more. Hugh Jackson clearly wants to more than Jay Gruden. But they've got to be more effective when they do it. I think the Bengals were 27th in the NFL in yards per carry.
3.6.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. So Seattle was second in the NFL in rushing attempts. I think San Francisco was third or fourth. So they ran it a lot more.
Yeah.
But partly because they were a lot more effective when they did.
Yeah.
So if the Bengals are going to do what Hugh Jackson sounds like he wants to try and do, and emphasize more of a power running game to not put so much on Andy's plate, then they've got to run more effectively when they do.
And I guess, you know, you got to go into the formation of the roster then when you're talking about, well, how do you run the ball better? Don't you have to look then at maybe improving the personnel? If you're talking offensive line maybe. I mean, that's a quality veteran offensive line I think people are really happy with. But I think you'd like to, if you're going to be more of a running team, do you need to replace a few players, draft a young guy who's a power running type, whether it be a center? Obviously, Anthony Collins hangs in the balance, so who knows what's going to happen with that. They love what Witt did at guard. Do you draft a run blocking type tackle? I mean, how do you start the process, you know, I guess? Where would you start?
It's not a terrible line to begin with.
No.
The fact that they had a lot of injuries. Witt missed significant time. Zeitler obviously missed a bunch. Bowling was out from the San Diego regular season game until the end of the year. So start by getting healthy. I think of the five guys, the guy who performed least effectively was Kyle Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting up there in years, and he's been injured in recent years. So you probably got to think at some point, all right, when do we make that transition at that position?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's, you know, maybe it is Bowling or one of the guards moving over at some point. I don't know. I think they're fine at running back. I think Ben Jarvis in the final year of his deal is going to be fine. I think Bernard obviously is a star in the making. I think this coming year the emphasis will shift more toward Giovanni Bernard than the law firm. But it's not going to be like 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be more like 6-4 instead of 50-50.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think that they were a better run-blocking line once Whitworth moved from tackle to guard.
Absolutely.
So if you can find a great tackle other than Anthony Collins, I think you have to seriously consider making that move because Witt's getting up there in years. You can probably play guard longer than you can play tackle, and he was more effective in that position. So yeah. That's something they definitely have to seriously consider.
Yeah, and I wonder, we've talked about Anthony Collins, and you have to believe with the way he played this year, particularly in pass protection, where, I mean, if you look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, how much you believe those or whatever, no one was really as effective pass protecting at left tackle at all as far as on a per-snap basis. I mean, it was, I believe, one hit was even allowed and no sacks and all that, and against some of the best in the game. But he is more of a pass-protecting tackle. So for the money he's probably going to get on the market, it's probably one of those things where you sit back and say, let's see if his number comes back to something we're comfortable
right.
with. They're certainly not going to go put some big offer on the table right from the beginning. I'd imagine they'd say, test the market, see what you have. We'll be sitting here, you know, just talk to us before you sign anything, and we'll be sitting here. Finede, Rucker are guys that come to mind the last few years that have hit the free agent market, where they thought, well, maybe they'll come back to us, and then someone backed the truck up to them, and they had to let them go. Collins maybe could end up being in that same mold. I think that's probably the way you have to – I would approach it, I think.
Yeah, something along those lines. I mean, they may put an offer out there, the best that they think they can afford, and see if he wants to stay for that number. That, mm-hmm. that seems unlikely to me. But I do think that they're not going to offer him an exorbitant amount – mm-hmm. To make him one of the best paid left tackles in the game. I don't think he's that player. I think he's very good. I do think it helped moving Witt over. But if somebody's willing to back up the truck for Anthony Collins, then he's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually have heard a bit of conversation about this. And if you look back over the last few years, free agency in the NFL could be changing because we've seen so many bad deals for teams that have gone and backed the truck up to players, you know, and it's much more expensive because of the new CBA and the way it works out, where guys are just hitting the bank whenever they make this their first big contract. And your Nnamdi Asamoah, I mean, you name it. You look at probably 75% of the free agent deals that have been big that have been made over the last five years or so, most of them have been bad. You wonder if we're now going to see where fewer and fewer guys are going to be getting the big free agent money. I wonder if teams will be more hesitant. The Bengals certainly have been for the last 4 years at least in throwing money at anybody. All the free agents they've picked up have been more complimentary, your James Harris mm-hmm. type pieces, Ben Jarvis, not huge deals. And I think most teams are going to start shying away from that after seeing the way so many have blown up and eaten up cap space.
Well, if you look at the teams that have been the most successful, which ones have made the huge free agent pickups? Not many. I mean, yeah. Denver with Peyton Manning, but that's kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
But aside from that, I mean, I can't name many. It's funny when you bring up the notion of, like, the team-changing free agent, the mm-hmm. superstar that you spend whatever it takes to get. Who's generally kind of the reference point for that? Reggie White.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It was 22 years
15
ago,
years ago or whatever, exactly.
It was the beginning of free agency.
Right.
Yeah.
So when that's the example that people use for spend whatever it takes to get that game-changing guy, well, then you know that more often than not, it doesn't work out that well.
Yeah. And in the end, it's just too much of a team. This is not the NBA where one guy's going to change your team unless it's the quarterback. It's the only position where that money can really be worth it. I mean, there really isn't any other one where you're truthfully affecting it that much. I mean, I guess Cliff Avril was a nice pickup for Seattle, but I mean, it's not like that was some massive deal where they spent. It's about finding the ones that fit you nicely.
Correct.
And don't break your bank. So I'm curious, and I want to go down through another topic here. You know, kind of looking back a bit at this season, who were for you were maybe two of the biggest pleasant surprises this past season that you think should have really added to the encouragement that Bengals fans should feel going forward?
Top of the list, Marvin Jones.
Right.
To finish double digits in touchdown catches. I mean, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I would have said Anthony Collins second on that list. I didn't know he had that in him.
Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood that he's going to be going elsewhere is costly. But it does show you that there are guys on the roster that are not getting a lot of playing time right now that aren't necessarily bad players.
Right.
Maybe they're still learning. maybe. They're just a tick below the guy that's playing more than them right now. But those guys are there. And the Bengals have done an excellent job of getting guys into their system, grooming them for when their opportunity comes. And then when it comes, they shine. And I don't think Anthony Collins is the only guy that fits that description.
Yeah, and you start talking about, well, who's going to be the next people to make that breakthrough, I think, with the almost certainty that someone's going to pay Michael Johnson an absorbent amount of cash, and good and deservedly so. Marcus Hunt, they've been building this. They've done a nice job of looking to the future and seeing what's two and three steps ahead, Marcus Hunt being the latest example of that. And I remember we were talking to Zimmer towards the end of the season, and him saying he thought Marcus Hunt was really starting to play really good football the last few games. They knew he was going to be a project. Now we'll have a full offseason under the Bengals' control, and they're not starting from really what was a ground zero project type of thing for Jay Hayes. He could be a guy that come next year, you know, he'll be a part of that rotation and could really be the next breakthrough player. They really need him to be, assuming Michael Johnson leaves.
Yeah, and not knowing who they'll go after in the draft. You know,
right.
They've definitely spent a lot of high picks on pass rushers for good reason. You know, the Zimmer system, which I think will continue under Paul Gunther, emphasized guys that could get to the quarterback and guys that could cover people. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if cornerback, defensive linemen are the first two picks this year.
Yeah.
Not out of the question. But I would agree, Marcus Hunt's a guy that I think is going to be a good player. I think Emmanuel Lemur is going to be a very significant player next year, you know, in the role that we expected him to have this year, coverage linebacker, which has become so important in the NFL. And his injury, there's no question he'll come back from it, a shoulder injury. It's not like this is one of those ones that, I wonder if he'll be the guy that we thought he would be. He'll be fine from day one.
Yeah, they had huge plans for Emmanuel Lemur this year. I mean, that was one of those things that Zim told us. People don't understand how big of an injury that actually was because they didn't know the plan that they had planned to put him out there for him. He was going to be playing a ton of snaps for them, and it forced them into, you know, I think Ray Maluga playing better than I think him better fit to the role, much thanks to Vontaze Burfict, who I think fits on my surprise list as well, is it allowed the hit not to be so much of Lemur, but he does offer more of what they're looking for out of that type of position where you don't want Ray out there as much on passing downs, and you would have seen more snaps where Lemur would have been out there instead of Ray, but. It'll make for a very interesting situation at linebacker because they still have a lot of depth, and I think people still have the bad taste of the San Diego game in their mouth. But you lose perspective on why the Bengals were so good was because of the depth of their roster, and they're not going to be losing a whole lot of people. And the few that they are going to be losing, I think they have a pretty decent plan for how to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, as I've said to people, there's no team in the NFL that will add a better player next year than Geno Atkins.
Right.
So they are going to add the single biggest piece of any team in the NFL. That's what I think of Geno Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
Plus Lemur, Taylor Mays, who proved to be a above average player once they found a good role for him, Leon Hall, etc. They've got a lot of additions that are going to be coming to the roster just from guys coming back from injury.
Yeah. And the question then becomes, really, and this will be the storyline going into camp, is two new coordinators. I mean, hasn't happened but once, I believe, to a team like this where you have to recover from losing two coordinators both the head coaching jobs, and one in Mike Zimmer that was so much a part of the fabric of this team and everything that they stood for. Everybody loves Paul Gunther, but he's not going to be Mike Zimmer. Certainly not going to be from the beginning. I guess the question becomes, what is the residual of that? I mean, how many wins does that cost you?
They're two new coordinators, but they're not two new systems.
Right.
So that's a big deal to me, you know, that continuity in system. It's not like these guys are now going to have to learn a completely different approach to offense and defense. It's coming from different voices. Mike Zimmer is irreplaceable. So it's going to hurt. But I'm confident that Paul Gunther will do a nice job. Otherwise, all of these other teams wouldn't have wanted him.
Right.
In that role.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Mike Zimmer thought highly enough of him to potentially bring him to Minnesota as his defensive coordinator, you know Paul Gunther is a sharp guy. And I'm a huge Hugh Jackson fan. I thought that he got screwed in Oakland.
Yeah.
You know, the Carson deal didn't work out in the short term for him. But the only two times in the last, I think it's 14 years, that the Raiders have won more than five games were the 2 years he was on the staff.
Right.
I mean, they were pretty competent. Certainly the year as head coach, they went 8-8. I think the year before they were 7-9 or 8-8.
But they had a great offense.
They had an excellent offense, exactly, when he was offensive coordinator with lousy quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the year he was offensive coordinator, his quarterbacks were Jason Campbell and Bruce Gradkowski. With all, you know, due respect to those two guys, neither one is good. How's that for respect?
I was going to say, that's actually no respect.
Yeah, okay. That was the Will Ferrell form of with all due respect. But, you know, they moved the ball and scored a lot of points with those guys at quarterback. And I think that Hugh Jackson is a great leader. Whatever position he's been in on the Bengals staff over the years, whether it was wide receivers coach in the first, you know, playoff run under Marvin, or now as a defensive assistant and then running backs coach, he's been excellent wherever they've put him. So I've got a lot of confidence that he'll do an excellent job.
Yeah, I think so. You mentioned this briefly today, and I think in this, we talk about the draft, which is really, you know, we got the combine coming up, and we'll be sure we'll be back on Scribe Session checking in from the combine when we go up there. And you know, all the draft prep. You kind of mentioned this. You know, I feel like corner is definitely priority one right now, considering the age back there, and they haven't seen all that they'd hoped to from Dre Kirkpatrick. And no one's young back there outside of Dre. So I mean, it really feels like this is time. And Marvin Lewis, not shy about first round corners,
right.
Loves them. I mean,
right.
Filled with them right now. I'm sure he'd love to have another one. It seems like if they can find the right fit at 24, that seems like a no-brainer if it's there.
Yeah, I agree. Position. That's where I would go.
Yeah.
For the exact reasons you described. And the other thing, too, about that position, they get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They are small guys who frequently have to tackle big guys. They are sprinting every play the entire game. You know, they lost one of their best ones this year in Leon Hall, and unfortunately, just due to the nature of the position, one of their top ones will probably go down at some point next year. It just happens at that position, and safety too. So you've got to have depth. You've got to keep churning in young legs all of the time. And I think almost every team has to draft one in the first or second round every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Adam Jones has turned himself into a great pro and really had two underrated seasons as far as quality. So you like that. The question around Leon Hall, you know, two Achilles injuries, you have to at the very least have a safety plan. I mean, there's just no guarantees there. What he did in his first comeback, I remember, did a story with the medical staff talking about how much the locker room really, really respects and likes them. But the first thing they said was, what happened with Leon Hall was unworldly. No, I mean, no one could have ever expected a recovery that good. And to come back the way that he did and have probably his best season he's ever had. To expect that to happen again is probably unfair. It is unfair. Who knows? It could.
I'm unfair.
Yeah.
That's what I expect.
That's what you expect.
That's what I expect.
All pro season out of Leon Hall. I mean, you wouldn't expect any less. I mean, the guy is as dedicated
as
it comes. I mean, I think people hope for that. But a body is a body, and his isn't getting any younger, so you at the very least wonder. I mean, for me, I think corner, and I think offensive line, I would poke around in there. You never know. I never know how a draft will fall. I don't think a lot of people at this time last year would have been saying, oh, tight end, clearly, is where they need to go. If things fall the way they do, and plan, you can change the way you set up, but I think for me, corner, offensive line, maybe the center, position.
You can get that guy after the second round, though.
Right.
Center.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The premium positions are, you know, you're gonna have to fill those.
Although it's kind of interesting, though, because my opinion on that changed a little bit after Whitworth moved from tackle to guard. I think I'd always bought into the notion that, you know, tackles are premium guys. It's the blind side book, the whole thing. You've got to get those guys on the edge to protect the quarterback. But now quarterbacks get rid of the ball so quickly that teams have to get pressure up the middle because it's a straight line rush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can beat somebody up the middle, you can get to the quarterback faster than you can coming around the edge. So center and guards are becoming more and more important.
Yes.
And we also see with Witt, with his pulling ability, what that does in the running game. So I am now kind of buying into the notion that all five spots are equally important.
Yeah. And then the question, of course, that every Bengals fan will talk about endlessly forever, which is Andy Dalton in the quarterback position. Second, third round quarterback. I mean, you, at the very least, you have to try to improve the backup spot. It seems like this is the year to maybe get somebody, maybe find your Russell Wilson. You know, whoever you believe in, a guy maybe it's a bit of a project that
sure.
you think, and make the decision, you know, put a little pressure on that position. You're putting pressure on every other position. Put a little pressure on that position and make it an interesting call and maybe have yourself a safety net in case things go haywire. I mean,
yeah, I don't even look at it as putting pressure on Andy.
Yeah.
I look at it as this is the final year of his deal. I don't expect the Bengals to extend him this offseason. I could be wrong. But based on the playoff failure, I'm of the opinion that you roll the dice. If he goes out and has a tremendous year and leads you to postseason success, then you reward him with the contract that that position deserves.
Mm-hmm.
But if he doesn't, then you've got to seriously consider, okay, we went 4 years with a guy. He had a lot of regular season success. He has not been able to take us where we want to go. And it's the most important position in sports.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, you got to move on. All Bengals fans hope that this is the year that he takes that next step. I'm sure he'll get the opportunity to do so. But having said all that, if a great quarterback is available for whatever reason in the second or third round, take him.
Yeah.
Take him.
Especially in this year where all we hear about is the depth of this quarterback class.
You That's know. What we heard about early, and now
yeah,
it seems like people are
yeah.
backsliding on that.
yeah.
You know, a month ago, I'm reading that Taj Boyd would be a great late first, early second, and now after the Senior Bowl, it's like, I wouldn't have Taj Boyd play catch with my 7-year-old son, you know? So I don't know how much is real and how much teams are trying to, you know, hide their intentions,
mm-hmm.
but that initial opinion that this is a deep class leads me to believe that there will be somebody in the second round, third round, whatever, that the Bengals will have to seriously consider.
Yeah, it feels like this is the year to do it. And, of course, we'll have, God, endless talk about that over the next 3 months, so we won't go too much more into the draft. We'll keep updating you as, you know, the meat market in Indianapolis happens, and then Mel Kiper dominates your life for another 2 months. And they pushed it back, so we get a little bit more of the build-up. You know, we get an extra couple of weeks of Mel. He had to love that. His salary had to gone up. He said, well, hey, you've got me on an extra 10%. That's an extra 10% for me. He gets extra gel, man. I mean, that's what's working out for him.
That extra couple of weeks might be the key to he and,
Todd McShay.
McShay, thank you. He and McShay will definitely come to blows.
Yeah.
You know, they've been able to hold off. The timing was just right. But now with two extra weeks, fists are going to fly.
How at the very least have they, you know, the ratings mongers haven't broke out the celebrity death match on a Saturday night with nothing else going on? You know, you got all this dead air. At least one of these Tuesdays where they never have any content. Just McShay, Kiper, celebrity deathmatch claymation at the
yeah,
very least.
I'm watching.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Or go, you know, you have the have a Kerrigan Harding celebrity boxing match followed by Kiper McShay after that, and it finally, I mean, this is genius. It's gold.
You know, back when Kerrigan Harding was happening, piggish males
yes.
like you and me
yeah.
kind of had to choose one or the other. I see you as a Harding guy.
Harding guy.
You were a Harding guy.
I was
come
not,
clean.
I was
come
not,
clean.
No,
Paul Daner.
I would come clean. I was not. You know, I might have been. Maybe a young Paul at 15 years old, misunderstanding the world a bit. Maybe I had my moment where I said, "You know what? I don't think she did it. I think she's good. She's just all these goons. She's just she's just a troubled soul."
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I did watch the 30 for 30. Fantastic.
Haven't seen it yet.
Oh, fantastic. But she's completely exposed as an awful, awful person. I'll let you watch it yourself.
I didn't need the filter. I was able to figure that out right away back in the day. I was on the air as a TV sports guy in Syracuse, New York when that went down. What a day that was.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, the afternoon feeds are coming in, and it's like, you know, breaking news, Kerrigan clubbed on leg at trials.
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Clubbed on leg? Just run with it. Just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. So what it, that had to have been as surreal.
Those are great days. Yeah. Those are great days as a TV sports guy. Yeah. I mean, you're sitting at your desk. You're like, okay, well, the basketball team plays in 3 days. We've got something we can trot out to preview, you know, Syracuse, Villanova, whatever it was at the time. Hey, what's this? Huh? Really?
Really?
Is there going to be foot? Yes.
Yeah. Wait, she's screaming why?
Yes.
Yeah.
News director's extension. Excuse me, boss. I think you're going to want to give sports an extra minute. The leading candidate for Olympic gold just got clubbed on the leg.
These days, though, on that call, on the other end, the news director, I don't know. Weather's really important to our viewers. So I think we might hold off.
Yeah, let's put it in between weather forecast 7 and 8. Of the 13.
Of the 13, exactly. Oh, man. Well, hey, this is a great segue because you do one of the great segments every week. You do fantastic fun facts with the Bengals players and Mike Brown. You went at the end of the season with Mike Brown, which was awesome. I highly recommend going and giving it a listen. But no one's ever turned it around on you and done fantastic fun facts with Dan Hoerter, have they?
No, they haven't.
So
you can be the first.
I can be the first to do fantastic fun facts with Dan Hoerter. I'm excited about this. I was hoping you weren't going to say, actually, three people have done it, because the podcast would end immediately. We would just go to roll credits, you know. So let's do it. Let's do fantastic fun. Oh, we should, I like to, whenever we do anything game show me, we like to roll in our British polka music underneath. So let's bring in that match of the day, British polka music. Dan Horn. Let's start here. You, as you just mentioned, are a proud Syracuse grad, worked there for years. What was the most issue Jim Boeheim ever took to one of your questions?
Syracuse had a game at Villanova that came down to a last-second shot attempt by a freshman point guard named Michael Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about it in the post-game show, and I don't remember exactly how I phrased it, but he took it as an insult and began ripping me in front of the Philadelphia media. Now, I was hosting his TV show, his radio show. I'd been around the program for years. I went there. So this was really the first time that he Andy Katz'd me in the room. Remember last year when he called him an idiot?
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, he comes at me, both guns blazing. And all these Philly guys are amused. You know, it's the young dude that's just getting undressed by the veteran coach. So afterward, as I'm like sulking in a corner, these old salty, crusty Philadelphia veterans are coming by and like tapping me on the shoulder. Don't worry about it,
kid.
It's happened to us all. So that was my number one Jim Boeheim moment.
Yes. You posted recently a gag video from your early days claiming that basically Jim Boeheim stole a game-winning play from Mike Krzyzewski because it had happened the previous year in the same building. So would you rather have that hair from that video or have Cuse have won a national title while you were a student?
Cuse won a national title while I'm a student. I mean, you can identify.
Yes.
We thankfully, we live in an era where you can be bald and not be shunned.
It's true.
I credit Michael Jordan.
God bless him.
He made baldness relatively popular for the rest of us.
Huge.
So I actually don't mind my hairline. I haven't had a bad hair day in about 20 years, which is good. No matter what the wind conditions, the humidity, or whatever, I look the exact same. I can go days without washing it. No one's going to know. I don't, but I could.
You know,
I could be on Survivor and look good on like day 8.
Right.
Bad beard, but my hair would be the same. So definitely a national championship in my college years.
I look back at some of the photos when I had hair in college. I tear up. I well up a bit. I do. I just remember the good old days and how I used, you know, how much I used to enjoy having it.
Would I rather have lettuce than not? Of course. Of course, but
if you own it, it's okay.
Yeah, that's the key. You know, you can't be throwing the comb over out there. No. You can't be, you know, tugging a chunk from the back and swooping it way over to the front.
Do you remember, the first day when you shaved it down and just said, forget it? You just gave, was it like a give up day where you just,
it didn't go that way for me.
The razor, no?
Yeah, it didn't go that way for me. I mean, I never combed over, but I kind of, you know, lived with a kind of a thinning hairdo for a while and then eventually said, eh. Time to go.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a day for me. I went from the 2 to the 0 level and just started going. And it was a good moment. It was a breakthrough for me, really, in life, I'd say. Let's move past my baldness.
This is Paul Daner fun facts.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I just can't help but tell stories.
Has Jim Boeheim ever done anything to you?
No, thankfully not.
Give it time.
Yeah, right. Okay, well-known fact, you hate Subway. It's a fairly deep-rooted loathing.
Is that a well-known fact?
It is to me. It is now. When is the last time you ate something from there?
Probably at least 10 years.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. In fairness to Subway,
yeah,
I don't like cold sandwiches. And I know they have some cooked ones on the menu, but it's primarily a cold sandwich place. Mm-hmm. I've evolved... You know, when fire came along, I liked the impact that it had on food.
Right.
So I tend to select things that have been cooked.
Yes.
About the only cold sandwich that I can eat, if forced, is a turkey sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think their turkey is good.
Yeah.
It's kind of the wrong color or something. I don't know. So I am anti-Subway for that reason.
It's the general principle where if you don't think... If you can't do turkey right, you probably just, you shouldn't try anything else. I think it's a good philosophy to live by. Okay, moving on. You were once a character on The Simpsons.
Correct.
Right. Was that the greatest achievement of your life?
According to my nieces and nephews, yes.
Yes.
It's the only thing that they've ever been impressed by. It's not really an achievement, but a friend of mine, Ken Levine, who was my minor league baseball broadcasting partner 1 year, is an accomplished Hollywood screenwriter and director. So he wrote an episode of The Simpsons. It was season 2 of The Simpsons. It's named Dancin' Homer. Homer becomes the mascot at the local minor league ballpark. And the sportscaster in that episode is named Dan Horde. So, you know, The Simpsons, it's on 20 times a day somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So every few months I'll get a call or an email out of the blue going like, hey, did you know that there was a character on The Simpsons named Dan Horde? As a matter of fact, I did.
I did,
and it is me.
Yes. Well, you were a minor league broadcaster. You were in Boston. You were with the Pawtucket Squad, the Triple A of the Red Sox. So what was the worst road trip in minor league baseball?
I'm lucky because I've done minor league play-by-play on 2 separate occasions, and both times it was in Triple A. So I never really had like the 12-hour, you know, Montana to Albuquerque or some crazy, brutal bus breaks down midway through the ride kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, really for me, the second time around, fairly recently, when I did minor league baseball for Pawtucket, it was more just being away from, you know, my young son for 7 or 8 days at a time, riding buses in the middle of the night with dim light, watching bad movies while I was trying to read. So it was just more the repetitive nature of it than a specific trip.
Yeah, it is brutal. Best broadcast team in any sport today?
That was an easy question a year ago.
Yeah.
When you still had the Sean McDonough, Jay Billis, Bill Raftery trio on Big Monday on ESPN. To me, those guys are the best ever because they combined information and entertainment better than anybody else. Since Raf is now doing Big East games on Fox Sports 1, I still love Sean and Jay. It's not quite what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still up there. Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, Mal Michaels is the best TV play-by-play man of all time, and Chris Collinsworth might be the best football analyst of all time, so I would say those two combos are probably my favorites.
Who was your guy when you were at Syracuse? Who was your guy that you loved growing up?
Well, the guy that I loved growing up was not from when I was in Syracuse, but when I was a kid growing up near Buffalo, the longtime voice of the Buffalo Bills, Van Miller, who was everything to a Buffalo kid. He was the sportscaster on the CBS affiliate. He did the Buffalo Bills games on the radio. When I was really young and the Buffalo Braves still existed, he did the Buffalo Braves games. So Van Miller was my guy. And it's funny because the other night, during the Super Bowl pregame show, when Joe Namath came out in his full-length mink, or whatever fur that was, I wanted to send out a tweet saying the last guy to appear at a Super Bowl in a full-length mink was Van Miller. Mm-hmm. And like the nine people from Buffalo that follow me would have gotten it because... When the season turned cold in Buffalo, Van Miller famously trotted around the Wilson Stadium press box in a full-length mink as an NFL radio play-by-play guy. The dude was wearing full-length fur.
It's excellent.
It was awesome. And when the Bengals played in Buffalo this year, I had the chance to chat with Van Miller, had a picture taken with him. It's one of the highlights of my life.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That is awesome. Well, it's like a good. We talk about eccentric broadcasters. You work with Chuck Mayshock, there are many great stories circulating about him. Most that have been told on air somewhere, I'd say. Which one is your favorite? Do you have a favorite Chuck story?
Aside from him getting kicked out, which has to be at the top of the list,
we can't count that. It's too. That's obviously an epic number one.
Yeah.
What's number two?
Yeah. Number two, and I know you've heard this story, but it's a classic, is probably the Oliver Purnell story. Mm-hmm. When Oliver Purnell was the head coach at Dayton, and Cincinnati played Dayton, during the broadcast, Chuck looked over him and said, "Danny, that head coach for Dayton reminds me of a famous actor." And so I'm not sure which one he's referring to. So I said on the air, "Well, Chuck, which one?" And he goes, "Oh, you know me. I don't really remember that stuff very well. But I know a movie he was in." "Okay, which one?" He goes, "Well, I can't remember the name of it, but I remember the plot." And this is all on the air.
Yeah.
It's when the old guy drives a broad to the grocery store. And so my reaction was your reaction.
Right.
I start laughing on the air. And then he goes, "You know, going for a ride with Miss Mockingbird."
Even better.
And I said, do you mean driving Miss Daisy?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it, driving Miss Daisy. So in one of the greatest developments in the history of my broadcasting career, years later, after Oliver Purnell left Dayton to become the head coach at Clemson, he returned to our schedule on a yearly basis as the head coach at DePaul. Mm-hmm. And at some point in every Cincinnati DePaul broadcast, I would, you know, bring up the point that, "Hey, Chuck, does Oliver Purnell remind you of anybody? Any, I don't know, actors?" And, naturally that would lead to a discussion of going for a ride with Miss Mockingbird.
Oh, unbelievable. What is the streak now at? How many consecutive games without getting kicked out are we at?
356 and counting.
356 and counting.
I have to have that number available at a moment's notice because I never know when I'll be asked.
Yeah, and how many times do you get that question? Do people...
Frequently, yes. At some point at the arena, home or away, before every game, somebody will ask me to update the streak.
Update the streak. Yes. Are you proud of that gag? I mean, that has to be... I mean, to have something that many people want to talk to you about, I mean, that you just invented, that's the deal for
it. It's a good gag.
It's a good gag.
It's a good gag.
It's a really good gag.
It's a good gag. And you know what? I really like it when somebody famous will ask me about it that I'm not even aware knows it. You know, whenever I see Bill Raftery, that's the first thing he asks me.
What's Chuck's streak?
Yeah, and frequently when Bill was still doing Cincinnati games, he would tell the director or producer or whatever to, "Hey, get a shot of that Chuck Mayshock at some point, and I'll update the streak." So it got some TV love from Bill Raftery.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I'll take you off the hot seat on the first time that we've flipped the script on Fantastic Fun Facts now with Dan Hord.
So hopefully they were fun.
They were fun. I had a good time. I think people are still listening, really. You can or not, we don't really care. But I definitely want to thank you for coming on the podcast, and we should try and do it again sometime.
I am willing and able.
Awesome. Well, here's what we're going to do, because as you know, as our loyal listeners, you know, we love our music here. And so you mentioned early on you're an Elvis Costello guy. So let's go out with a little bit of Elvis Costello in your honor. So thanks to Dan Hord. We'll be back in a couple of weeks from the Combine. We'll have everything you need to know about Bengals. That Reedy will be back, and we'll bring him back in. You weren't curmudgeon-y enough, quite.
Sorry, Joe, I let you down.
Let you down a little bit. So Elvis Costello, a little peace, love, and understanding, something we all could use as we go forward this offseason. So thank you for listening to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is the only pain and hatred and misery? And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I wanna know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? My spirit gets so down.